Hey, all you people who enjoy the Scientific Fat Emperor podcast. This is probably one of the most important ones I've ever released, and it's actually the audio from a video I produced, which looks back on 2 years of the COVID issue. I've packed it with data, but understandable to the layperson. The only thing I'd say is, by all means, enjoy this and listen and hear the reality exposed, but really you should watch the video, and the best place is my Odyssey channel. So basically it's odyssey.com, that's odyssey.com/@Ivor Cummins. So that's the @Ivor Cummins, but I'll put a link in the description of this podcast below. So I highly recommend you pop to Odyssey and watch this whole presentation with slides and data, but again, completely understandable to the layperson and to the scientist and doctor, but really best to watch it and see all of the data right in front of your eyes. But if not, enjoy the narrative here from myself, and I do mostly verbalize all of the figures and the data in any case. So probably the most important podcast I ever released, and hopefully that interests you. And links to the video in the description box below. Thank you, everyone. Greetings, all you great people who are interested in correct science, data interpretation, logic, and ethics. Today I'm going to do a video revisiting my viral video of September 2020. So this video went out, got nearly 2 million views, and in it I went through all of the primary vectors or aspects of the COVID-19 issue at the time, and I clarified, I think, a hell of a lot. As a result, it made a splash. It got a half page in the New York Times, no less, and lots of other places, and it caused a furore. And of course, after a couple of weeks, it was censored. And that's what we began to see happening in 2020 in a big way, for the first time in Western democratic history, if you will. But today I'm going to revisit that video, and it's been fascinating for me to go back to it, go through it, take every slide and everything I said, and reassess it honestly, and ask the question, well, was I correct in each aspect, or was I incorrect? Let's look now and do a checklist. And in doing so, we'll actually go through the actual top facts, what's correct and what's not, in COVID-19 over the last 2 years. And I'll add in a lot of new material that's arisen over the last couple of years to validate whether we were correct or not. So it's a great resource to share with your friends and family. It's going to be non-passionate, it's going to be very scientific, and it's going to be understandable to the layperson. We're going to go through the reality of COVID-19. Alrighty then, we'll start off with the New York Times article that was very much driven by my video, amongst other things, like many people questioning the narrative and suggesting what I was suggesting. So this article was to counter that. And there was this Dr. Christopher Murray, Institute of Health Metrics Evaluation, and they produced the epidemic models, which were driving a lot of the hysteria. So he was aghast at the idea that maybe a large proportion of people were de facto immune, and that maybe things weren't quite as catastrophic as they were saying. But the whole article's there. You can freeze frame if you want the segment that covers me, and they questioned pretty much everything I was saying. So in this video, we'll check and see, was I correct or were they correct? So we'll use a checklist and we'll be quite thorough and very clear. So I'll play the first segment now of my 2020 September video, just a minute or two, and then we'll check in on that segment and see was I correct or not. Here we go. So there's Europe. The important thing to note is that, as per Professor Michael Levitt, in the northern temperate regions like Europe or North America, Northeast, you get a Gompertz curve. And the reason is because the virus, when it comes in new, it rapidly hits around 20% of the population. So around 80%, it's becoming clear, are already de facto immune through cross immunity, T-cell, mucosal immunity from prior coronavirus in the large family of coronaviruses. it's got huge similarity, this SARS-CoV-2, to prior coronaviruses. So our immune system has many mechanisms to react. But around 1 in 5 people or 20% will be less cross-immune, and they're the ones that it has to go through. And then the virus has much more difficulty and stumbles over immune people all over the place. So you get the turning of the curve, and this is entirely normal. And then it comes down in the Gompertz fashion.
So that was me in September 2020, and I was pretty much on the money, I believe. But let's go ahead now and look at what I said there, check it out and see what the data really said over the 2 years and how correct it was. And then we'll move on to all the other slides in the presentation. I'll bring them up one by one, just mention briefly what I said, and then check it against the facts after 2 years have passed. So enjoy.
I went through Gompertz, I went through immunity, some other things. So my next slide was showing the classic Gompertz curve. I actually picked it out from 1918, the Spanish flu. And you can see it clear as day, how it goes up and then down with a longer tail. And the following season, when it came up again, you saw the same curve, highly seasonal and following Gompertz. As the susceptible people acquire the virus, they have their issues, and then it fades away with seasonality factors and with more and more people have actually been through the experience. So a couple of reasons, but it curls off Gompertz. So certainly correct there. Now I'll show a more recent slide that I was using, and it shows Ireland as an example, but all of Northern Europe and other areas a similar thing. And we see 2020, the virus triggered seasonally, and you had a kind of Gompertz style curve. And then we opened up slowly over the next month or two, fully took away most restrictions. We had no actual vaccine, and it just stayed low all through the summer. It was kind of a pseudo peak here, and quite amusingly, the Irish authorities reacted to this, but too late, with level 5 lockdown that came after the curve had turned itself. And of course, the curve continued on down, and they put their lockdown in a bit too late. But then it did trigger in winter again properly, and we saw the Gompertz type behavior again, independent of measures. And then we de-triggered coming into the summer. And even though, yes, there was a vaccine here, we got the exact same kind of behavior as we had seen back in 2020. The curves were pretty much the same kind of thing. So this really shows the seasonality, the Gompertz, etc. So on our checklist, we look first at Gompertz dynamics, which Professor Michael Levitt had called out at the very start. Were they indeed the case across the board pretty much? Yes, correct. So we were correct to be talking about that back in September 2020. Now seasonality, I was obviously also bringing up, and by mid-21, the scientific literature was acknowledging seasonality. Way too late, because we knew in the summer of 2020, but they were now saying, oh yes, it is seasonal. No, and they were looking into the factors of why. But again, too late. And fascinatingly, the WHO in July 2020 had to do a bulletin to tell everyone it was not seasonal. So right when we realized from prior work over the decades and from the behavior in 2020 that it was strikingly seasonal, they chose to come out and say, it's not seasonal. Why would you do that? Well, maybe if you're trying to push lockdowns or masks during the summer, when it was gone until the following winter, and people might question that, it might be important to reassure them that it's not seasonal, that those measures are still appropriate in the middle of the summer in Northern Europe. But anyway, so powerful seasonality, as I was calling out way, way back, was I on the money? Yes. That's just the reality. So in terms of immunity, I was saying from Professor Beda Stadler, the incredible immunologist in Switzerland, I was saying that around 80% are de facto or largely immune from any real effects. And when we see the figures going right through the second season, cumulatively with massive testing, we have 64,000 positives across Europe per million people. Now, if you take that figure, you see that over two full seasons rolled up total, we had 6 in 100 people only actually registered a positive. And that's around 6%
I was saying maybe 20%. But let's roll this up to say 20% if there was even more testing. And that's very generous, right? That shows that over 80% were de facto immune. And in fact, this 20%, if you stretch it, they were positive PCRs, but a huge majority were asymptomatic and had no issue. So that majority in this 20% were de facto immune as well, because they really had very little effect, and therefore they had an element of immunity to it that was triggered, maybe T cell, whatever, and would not really have been spreading in any significant way. So certainly over 80% were de facto immune. 80% de facto immune? Yeah, that was perfectly appropriate to be saying in September 2020. Now, I reminded people then in the video about the actual excess mortality, which is the crucial measure of any pandemic. You cannot use the PCR badged deaths or positives. You must look at what's the impact. And I showed that from Euromomo, covering around 360 million people in Europe, the excess death for 2018 in the flu season was around 140,000 people out of that 360 million. And this is pretty normal. Now, if you look at 2020 April, you see the big spike for sure. But you've got to note that there was an exceedingly low death rate, right, in the 2019 season and the run-up to April in 2020. Extraordinary. And that would have led to a lot of frail, susceptible people who would normally, sadly, have passed in a normal flu season, not passing. So you're going to have a stockpile there of people who are very susceptible to passing from any respiratory disease that comes along. So when COVID triggered, yes, there was a very significant spike, which seasonally and through community immunity curled over for that year. But when you add up the total impact, it was around 180,000. So in fact, it wasn't markedly different than 2018. Right? And it was less than what you would see in many prior years in the past few decades. So it was an important point to see that the impact in excess deaths over what you'd expect normally was not that dissimilar to prior years. So this was correct. Also, this from Johan Hellström was really, really revealing, and it's from the Swedish government database, and you can see the Spanish flu spike had a very big deaths per million excess, corrected for population. But the corona spike, and this does include April and into May of 2020 when the thing was fading away in Sweden, so this reflects the corona impact, you can see that it's nothing compared to Spanish flu, and in fact it's less than a few prior years in the previous decades. That's the reality of the impact in an aged country, which Sweden is, quite an aged demographic, and hopefully this illustrates the reality. So this was entirely appropriate to be saying. Deaths comparable to bad flu, well, that's what the data says. They're in the envelope of a bad or severe flu year, like 57 or 68 or even 2000, one could argue. That is a fair statement. So, correct. Now, in terms of the modelling, which I then covered, it showed various representations of what Imperial College modelling suggested for Sweden with no lockdown and with some lockdown or soft lockdown. But the reality is shown in blue, what actually happened in Sweden. And you can see the modelling was outrageously over-predicting and terrifying, scaremongering and driving lockdowns. There was another analysis here, Corona Pogue, and again, it shows you all the different potential scenarios of lockdown severity from a Swedish team, which was leveraging Imperial College's models, but the actual cumulative impact was way lower with very little lockdown in real world. This is from our movie. If you go to covidchroniclesmovie.com, you'll be able to get the movie for free, download and streaming. And this is one of the tables we put in. It shows two Swedish teams, scientific teams, who modelled what would happen with minimal lockdown. And we see the reality. The reality is nowhere near the modelling. Another graph I showed back in September 2020 showed the Gompertz curve again in Sweden. But we called out the deaths that were non-comorbid and more likely to be directly driven by COVID-19. And they're way, way lower, as you'd expect. They're more like the number for actual excess death. I reminded Spanish flu spike versus corona spike in the aged demographic Sweden. No comparison. The excess mortality during the heat of the corona wave, right, was not overly remarkable at all. So, impact modelling was nonsense. Check. Absolutely. And this has been proven beyond any doubt at this stage. But I said it in September 2020 and got censored for it. Here was some great stuff from PLC, who's done great analysis. I showed this in 2020 in my video. And he used mortality.org data to show that countries that got hit pretty hard, like Sweden, had a surprisingly low mortality in the prior period. They had a trough of mortality. And this speaks to the kind of harvesting effect, or some people say dry tinder, aged frail, who not expectedly, they didn't pass as much as you would expect. A soft flu season, if you will, preceding. And then you do get a spike in mortality. Netherlands, very similar pattern. Low mortality in the prior year, and then they get hit. Spain, low mortality, way down, and then a big hit. Great Britain, very similar, right? Very important, this data. If we look at Sweden again, we just covered, and compare to Finland, the Nordics. Remember, oh, Sweden got hit more than the Nordics. Well, the Nordics don't really show the seasonal pattern as much for various reasons. And they did not have a preceding trough like Sweden. And they didn't really get hit when SARS-CoV-2 triggered. And Norway similarly. So this is one of the big reasons for the difference in the Nordics. Not the lockdown. And another point to make is that Finland and Norway, while talking up their lockdown, in many cases they weren't doing much different than Sweden in actual lockdown in reality. So this whole thing was nonsense. David Spiegelhalter also showed data, and I'll show it now, and it says the same thing in his paper. And basically, if you had a harsher prior season, a harsher flu intensity over 2 years, you tended to get very low impact from COVID in deaths per 1,000. But if you had soft prior flu season years, then you tended to get higher impact. And it's basically saying the same thing in a different analytical way. So really important data that should have been talked about at length. I talked about it and I was censored. This paper was also out at the time, in the summer of 2020, and it showed 16 factors for Sweden's high COVID death rate among the Nordics. And top of the range, or top of the heap, was what I just went through. Soft prior seasons and a build-up of kind of harvesting, or dry tinder is the term that some teams used. And there's many other reasons too, but it ain't lockdown. That's down the bottom. This other study, at the same time, showed in graphical terms and analytically that Sweden had a big build-up of dry tinder, and then they got hit pretty bad. But you can see Denmark and Finland particularly had much lower potential frail people because of their history, and they got lower hit, and Norway is somewhere in the middle. So there was plenty of this data out there, but showing it got you in trouble. So Sweden versus Nordics was nonsense, that compare we heard about around the clock. Absolutely, it was nonsense. There may be slight truth in it, but overwhelmingly, it was meaningless scientifically. So, correct again. Here's another one that was more recent that I showed. Similar point, but very important. COVID excess mortality, right, and this is from government database in Sweden, is less than several prior years excess mortality, okay? And it's far less than the excess mortality from the Spanish flu, unsurprisingly. But I went a little further and I got the data for the age breakdown of the deaths in Spanish flu. And you'll see that lots of infants died and the median age of death was in maybe the 30s. So the life years lost for these deaths in Spanish flu 1918 were enormous compared to COVID, because Sweden, COVID, the average age of death was up towards 80. So if you correct for that factor and you look at life years lost impact, which is the really important thing, you can take this bar compared to 1918 and essentially it becomes more like this compare. You can hardly see it. It's in the region maybe of 100 times less impactful than Spanish flu in Sweden. But that's not what we were being told at the time. This was being compared to Spanish flu, as in could be similar once in a century, which is clearly ridiculous. So, Sweden versus the Nordics, certainly nonsense. And Spanish flu comparison, as I've just shown you, totally nonsense. But we heard it round the clock during 2020 until they began to not really say it anymore. I showed this from Professor Carl Hennigan, which was very interesting, spoke to seasonality, absolutely dominating over masks and lockdown. He made the point that there were 50,000 pubs in August that had now been fully open with no masks for 6 weeks. And when I looked at this, it was up to around 9 or 10 weeks. So around 500 million people interactions you could estimate from all of this pub activity or bar activity. But what happened since they dropped all the measures and all of this interaction happened? Well, the curve kept falling right through the summer up to the following winter. And it was a beautiful illustration that seasonality and community immunity factors were driving the curves and really nothing to do with masks and lockdown. I put this out at the end of April or early May, and briefly I just showed how the evidence for lockdown being effective was really as weak associational evidence, right? And I just catalogued some of it. And I showed there was huge and solid evidence against lockdown being an effective intervention. And Woods Hole were the first to publish a paper showing across the world lockdown had no correlation to outcomes or death, followed by Lancet, same outcome, and many other publications, and Professor Levitt, of course, showing the same thing. And the logic made no sense, and I made this clear, that millions of grocery workers across Europe and US and Ireland, I was looking at specifically, they were not locked down. They were indoors with no masks in the peak of the epidemic in April 2020, and they showed no real signal for extra infection or death. Even though you had the great unwashed people flowing in and out all day long, there was no signal. And that just demonstrated that this lockdown effectiveness thing was absurd. I gave a Dropbox link to the first bunch of papers and articles illustrating this. And then I went on to actually put nearly 50 papers and articles showing the same thing on this blog post. And I gave up at that stage, but there have been many more since. So there's overwhelming evidence that lockdown is completely ineffective, but of course highly damaging, right, to your future health and cancer diagnoses and everything else. But there's no evidence really supporting it that's credible. So, lockdown's highly ineffective. The data's in, guys. No question about it, right? But in September 2020, I was calling this out and I got smacked for it. The masks. I showed many studies. There's no question over 40 years of testing with proper science and randomized control trials, etc. No signal comes out for the effectiveness of masks in influenza aerosol type spread, which is the same as coronavirus type spread. So it's directly analogous. And the thing is, the science was in over 40 years. Masks have almost no effectiveness. It's hard to measure if indeed it exists. I showed as well that mandatory masks came in, empirical data from real world. And in every case, this was Germany. You could see Austria, you could see Poland, but there's many, many more all over the world. When the mask came in or when tough mask regulations came in, the curves never changed, right? And Professor Beda Stadler called this out as well a few months later. He said, if you bring in masks and they have any effectiveness, within 2 weeks, the incubancy period, you will see an effect on the curve. It'll halve or it'll drop or something will happen. Never happens anywhere in the world. More recently, this just came out from Justin Hart a short while ago, and it shows mask mandates versus no mask mandates across America, all the counties with a population of over 100K. Great data. Do you spot what I see? No difference, mandates or no mandates, right? And that's repeated everywhere. So, masking highly ineffective? Absolutely. Sorry, guys, but it is. 40 years of science said it, and all of the data empirically that's come out over the last 2 years validates that fact. I reminded people that because the masks and lockdowns from the science and the data clearly were highly ineffective, that meant you couldn't say that this number out here in 2020 was lower because of lockdowns and masks. It would have been higher. No, it's comparable to 2018 excess death. It's a straight compare, a fair compare. And again, I remind you, you have to take into account the very low death rate in the year running up until the triggering of the virus, SARS-CoV-2 in April 2020. These are comparable. Seasonality, I went through in some detail. Not too many people were going into that back then. I showed the canon of literature showing coronavirus is seasonal, strongly, like influenza, and it has pretty much the same kind of season. Other ones have different seasons. I showed this example. I showed Italy had their big impact, right? And it was around end of March, April. We knew at the time from the data that their lockdown came in a little late and that the curve was already curling over, and that was the same in the UK. But in any case, it got hit here. If you look at Peru and Brazil, which are in the southern tropical area, a different seasonal timing for influenza, well, hey presto, it's also different for SARS-CoV-2. So Peru locked down back here when Italy was seeing the problems and locked down rock hard. I mean, it was military grade. And Brazil famously refused to lock down. Little bits of lockdown here and there, but effectively not. But you'll notice Peru did worse. And Peru was in with the lockdown early, but it made no difference. And the other thing I pointed out, Brazil in November 19, SARS-CoV-2 was in the human sewage. And in Italy, I think it was October, by looking at blood samples, they also found antibodies. So the virus had migrated across, but it seasonally triggered and followed its curves, independent of lockdowns. That was the point. Hope Simpson, I went through, incredible work over 50 years. Dr. Edgar Hope Simpson, who studied influenza obsessively and wrote this amazing book. And I just showed that his patterns for influenza roughly matched up with what we were seeing in northern temperate, Italy, northern Europe. You see this big spike and fall off for the summer. And his patterns for southern tropical for influenza roughly matched up with what we were seeing in Peru and Brazil. Again, all independent of lockdown, masks, and any of that stuff, based more on seasonality, regionality, humidity, human immune system function that varies throughout the year depending on the region, etc., etc., but not lockdown and masks. I illustrated this point again for the USA, and these slides again are from September 2020, and I showed how the northeast of America is northern temperate, Europe-like, and sure, they got the same curve, which fell away pretty much on its own. And then USA South is more northern tropical type pattern because of its microclimate and its regional dynamics. So they got hit more later. So it appeared like USA was getting a long, long, steady, continuous thing. But the reality was the different regions were just triggering. And I went through Midwest, which is more like Northeast America, and USA West, which is more like USA South. Just showing this seasonality is huge. This one I really liked. Upper Midwest, you see, if you pick a cluster of states together, their curves all go up and down together. And if you pick a different seasonality, regionality area and pick a few states, their curves all go up in a very different way. But again, absolutely no connection to the lockdowns or mask mandates, whether implemented or not, all based on the regionality, seasonality, clear as day. So this was just April 12th, 22. I just went out and I thought it was a great example. In Ireland, they dumped all measures back in February. Right? Dumped all the measures in February. It was extraordinary, same as the UK. But then the curve triggered, went up and began to curl down. And in Ireland, you had an enormous media campaign with all the old suspects coming out, screaming for masks to be re-implemented. And I think they realized that the curve is going to curl over, just like I've always been saying, and there'll be no measures to justify it for. So they wanted to get masks in to kind of do a rain dance thing, to say, oh, look, we brought in the masks just in time. Look, the curve came down. But the curve was already coming down. So sure enough, it collapsed right through a period of many months with no measures, no masks, no lockdowns. Curve followed as expected. Yet again, quo erat demonstratum. So that's not an extra checklist one there. It's just reaffirming and battening down the seasonality and the lockdown mask and some other items here being valid. So everything I've said was valid so far back in September 2020. Now, the case-demic got in a bit of trouble for this. They didn't like it. I didn't make up the term, but I liked it. So a case-demic is when you don't really have an impact from an epidemic, but you do have loads of cases and positive PCR, so you can still make people feel that there's a big problem. So let's look at the graphs I showed. I illustrated that the epidemic was in April 2020 in Northern Europe, and it fell away seasonally and with the development of a lot of immunity from the susceptible. And that out here in the summer, we were not in an epidemic, we were in a case-demic. But I made the point that if you keep testing and even increase your testing by a factor of five, you'll make it feel like you're in a kind of pandemic. But the ICUs and the hospitals are largely empty of SARS-CoV-2 problem people. So this was the case-demic. And I also said that as we go into the winter, by all means, we will go back more to a seasonal resurgence that will be more like an epidemic because there'll be people in hospital and ICU. But all summer, we had a case-demic. So case-demic is a summer phenomenon driven by inappropriate excessive PCR testing and calling the positives cases when they are not in an ICU, in a hospital, or even very sick. That's the point of case-demic. I called out the PCR problems, which were part of this case-demic problem. You can get a positive test and it can be dead virus fragments, tiny fragments from an infection you had months before. It can be a false positive. It can be an infection that really didn't affect you systemically or cause you to be particularly infectious, but you're still a positive and you're called a case, even though you're not in hospital and you're not even really spreading it. So this was the problem. PCR was the killer test that basically made everything go crazy. Here were some of my case-demic curves, and they were quite striking at the time, and they still strike me now. So during the actual epidemic, you had cases go up and then down, and you had deaths go up and then down. They're shown under the line. But during the case-demic, this is Ireland, cases are rising, all kinds of hysteria being built up in the media, but nothing happening in reality, and no one seems to notice that. UK was the same, real epidemic, deaths, significant sad. But the case-demic, nothing's really going on, but you're causing hysteria with the PCR test. Same in Germany, exact same pattern, same in Switzerland, same in Spain. I showed all these countries. There were some impacts in Spain apparently popping up, but one per million people per day. So, I mean, just meaningless. And Netherlands, same thing. France, same thing. Northern Europe across the board. And USA, I called out again what I described a few minutes ago, that it's not really a case-demic per se, even though the cases are rising massively and the impacts are not actually huge. The fact is that the South region is now having its triggering period. So the deaths do continue because USA is not like Northern Europe countries that are crisp in their seasonality. It's multi-regions in one continental landmass. So that's an important point, and I think I articulated it well, but wasn't popular for some people. And this was fantastic from Ragnar Lives on Twitter. He's probably banned by now, but he just showed the swine flu kind of pseudo-pandemic. And basically, all during the summer, they tested with the new PCR test called FluChip, and they were freaking out, buying masks and everything.
tons of positive PCRs, but there was no real deaths and no impact. So we do have a precedent for this. I called it out in September. It's been done before, but not like it's been done this time. And it just showed again that in UK data, you had this case demic, huge PCR positives in the summer, a lot of talk and a bit of hysteria, but the deaths in the summer, the mortality overall was the lowest summer in years. But the PCR gave you cases and gave you something to screech about. And this article I called out back then, it's still available. You can Google Spiegel, swine flu, and an incredible 10 or 12 page article basically calling out the outrageous behavior of WHO and pharmaceutical companies and others during the swine flu panic of 2009. And this here is interesting that in January 21, the WHO finally questioned the PCR. And what we'd been screaming since the summer of 2020 about PCR using too high cycle counts, having false positives, should be treated in a different way, and cases should be verified with symptoms and other diagnostics and not just PCR. Well, the WHO finally came out and began to make these noises, and the CDC later withdrew its emergency use authorization for PCR. But that was after the vaccines came in. There suddenly seemed to be a willingness to be less case hungry after the vaccines came in. Maybe that's a coincidence. And again, that's just, you can freeze frame, but that's just some of the content in this WHO bulletin and kind of reflects what I just said. So, casedemic was an absurdity, as I called out at the time. You're damn right it was. It was insane. But it carried on the whole summer in Northern Europe and in other areas of the world. PCR was highly misleading. Positive PCR, remember, is not a real case. A case is someone who ends up in hospital very sick. That's been the definition for all of the last century. But suddenly they made a case, simply a positive PCR, with a highly flawed and misleading test, particularly misleading during a casedemic when you're not experiencing actual serious impacts at all, like in the summer in Europe. So absolutely, I was correct to call this out in the way that I did. And there you have it. The checklist is looking pretty okay for me and for Heart Group and the Great Barrington Declaration and all the other scientific groups around the world who are trying in late 2020 to counter some of the madness. Now, I showed this slide and we're coming near the end now, and I just showed that, look, coming into the winter, the cases will rise and the impacts will rise. It'll be flu most years. It'll probably be SARS-CoV-2 this year, as in coming into late 20 and 21 season. And the reason is that SARS-CoV-2 has clearly kind of kicked influenza out of the virome. So influenza activity has just dropped away with the presence of SARS-CoV-2 throughout the human host population. So we're going to see stuff in the winter, but it'll be perhaps like a normal flu excess mortality impact and not as severe as the first round. So I showed Spain, and it was beginning to rise in terms of deaths with a positive PCR. And I showed the actual mortality in April 2020 in Spain. This is from Euromomo. This is the actual impact as opposed to PCR badged. And I said, well, what if 2017 excess death impact happened in the coming season, late 2021? We'd see something like this in terms of deaths. And they would be badged now with SARS-CoV-2, not flu. We're not testing for flu. But that might be pretty normal, like prior years. Yet we might try and create hysteria from this, even though it's not really different excess mortality than prior flu seasons where we did nothing. Okay, so I called out that caution that we got to watch carefully and not let that happen if people be misled. And I'll play a quick clip now where I illustrated the potential unintended consequences, danger of lockdowns and masks that made no sense. So wouldn't it be ironic if actually what would have been a mid-range winter actually became worse because we had not developed the normal ancestral evolutionary summer period community immunity? Now that would be
an enormous backfire. And it probably shows the potential dangers of doing things that are not scientifically based, like Sweden did it, doing things that are not based on good science and continuing them all summer. So there you have it. This is the problem. Even though these measures are highly ineffective, they may, if anything, make things worse the following season. And I've since polled recently the Spanish data, long after September 2020. So let's look. We'll move this aside here. And here's what actually happened in Spain in that following season. And sure enough, it was not dissimilar than 2017. You know, as it happened, that's what happened. And, you know, there's no flu because that's displaced by COVID-2. So most of this would be attributed to SARS-CoV-2, which is what I had called out in September 2020. So there you go. And if you look at Sweden, which is the control country, crucial, it got a reasonable hit in April 2020, though it was one of the lower ones in Europe, lower third of excess mortality, far less than Spain, even though Sweden had no lockdowns, no masks, and kids up to 16 maintained in school. And sure enough, in their second season, even before the vaccine, they got almost not above statistical significance. So they played an absolute stormer. They're one of the big winners because they used real science. And I'll just introduce a little clip from myself in late 21 explaining Sweden in pretty clear detail. And I think you'll find it very interesting what their actual mortality outcome was. Sweden, just to emphasize the point, with no lockdowns, no masks, and kids in school up to 16 throughout, and Sweden has an aged demographic similar to England's. Sweden, if you put a baseline, for the whole period of January 20 right up to November 21, has now got a negative excess mortality comparing to prior years. It's actually negative in excess mortality for the whole pandemic period at this point, with no lockdowns, no masks, and kids in school throughout. Thank you. Okay, there you have it. So, pretty clear as day that they followed the proper science, the 2019 WHO Western science, not the China CCP science that we picked up in March 20, lockdowns and masks, and they did amazingly well. So, I'll finish off with a few slides from our movie, COVIDChroniclesMovie.com. You can see everything in that movie for free, download or streaming, but here's a few slides I did as a companion piece to the movie. And here we have Sweden mortality per million from the official government data, and you can see 2019, if you put the average death rate in roughly across around 9,200 per million per year, and you look at 2019, as I said earlier, it was surprisingly low. And rough and tough, we ended up with an excess mortality in 2020 that roughly matched the deficit from 19. So again, back to the harvesting or dry tinder phenomenon, which is hugely important. But no media was covering this phenomenon, no academics. It went against the narrative. UK, just to show, they have an average of 9,800 deaths per million. And they are an aged demographic like Sweden, so this number is what you might expect. But as you can see, 2019 in UK, also this major deficit. And rough and tough, you know, we've got this harvesting effect. It's a big part of what happened, depending on the country. Ireland then, very interesting, and people just don't realize this. Ireland was slapping itself in the back for having very little impact from SARS-CoV-2. Because they did the hardest lockdowns in Europe. Well, that's nonsense. So if you look at Ireland, it has 6,300 deaths per million. That's amazingly lower than the UK or Sweden that's up near 10,000. Why is that? That's weird, right? Well, no, it's not weird. It's simply that Ireland has a much younger demographic. So it doesn't see as big peaks and troughs. It doesn't get hit as hard as flu seasons. And in 2020, it's one of the big reasons why there wasn't a major impact and why there wasn't a harvesting effect per se.
So that's it. Demographics are one of the biggest parts of the COVID story that never gets covered. No real harvesting in Ireland, as I described. So we've got our checklist, and I don't think I've been biased. Being fair, I'm looking at the last year or two's data since that talk of September 19. Gone through it for you there. Can't be much clearer. And pretty much across the board, largely speaking, yeah, I was correct back then. So I was censored for being correct, essentially. And a lot of the main media outlets and various scientific bodies have since acknowledged quite a few of these things, but quietly, too little and too late. But they drove the hysteria when we needed to focus on the data. And that's what led us down the garden path. Now, I'm going to have to move this checklist to aside. You're going to need a bigger boat, bigger checklist. And I'll just drop in another one. And I'll note that the 2019 WHO guidelines were correct, pandemic guidelines, absolutely. The China CCP stuff, lockdowns, as I've shown you, no basis in science, should never have happened. Scientific Sweden was correct, I've shown you that, pretty clearly, I think, as clearly as I can. So Scientific Sweden was correct. And I might just add in that Ireland and others claiming lockdown helped them because they had a lower impact than others is essentially data fraud, as I've explained, right? So there's another one. Now, I could go on all day, but I want to bring this to a close, keep it not too long, this video. But I could keep filling these things in. And the key thing is that we were on our side, whether you take Pandata, Heart Group, Great Barrington Declaration, all the experts, professors, Michael Levitt, and everyone else, largely on our side of the argument, were overwhelmingly correct on all the primary vectors. And by inference, that means the narrative side, you know, all those academics and professors, for whatever reason, were largely incorrect. And that's just the way it is. And it's important that we internalize this, because going forward, if we fool ourselves or allow ourselves as a modern civilized society to believe nonsense and then reapply the nonsense next time there's a problem, that would be beyond tragic. So that's the key takeaway from this. I'd close with my Patreon and PayPal. You guys out there have been incredibly supportive. I hugely appreciate it over the past couple of years. I got a lot of abuse. I took a lot of blows. You know, national newspapers in Ireland and, well, New York Times and UK outlets as well were remorselessly going after me. And I had attacks on my various systems too, people trying to get me banned off Twitter, etc., etc., going after my professional bodies they went after, and all that stuff. But I kept at it, and the reason is because truth in science is important to me, and I have five children, and the future for them is important too, and I don't want them living in a nonsense world, basically owned by corporates and, you know, everything topsy-turvy and crazy. And I won't even get into the pandemic treaty and the desire to have QR codes and essentially a form of social credit system brought in the coming years in the free West. But there you go. So anyone who can continue to support, really appreciate that. And any new people coming across my material, if you can help me keep the analysis going and keep the train on the track, that means so much. Thank you.